When is a law not binding on everybody? Next on Principles and Policies. Thank you for joining us today for this edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principles and Policy. And along with me today is, as usual, my Vice Chairman of the Institute, my co-host, my good friend and fellow analyst, Chuck Michaels.
And it's good to be here, Barry. It's good to hear you back at the mic, although you're sounding a little dry in the throat. Hopefully we can get
just
all
a little
through.
Bit. Yeah, I'm still trying to shake what I thought I had shaken earlier last week. It came back with a vengeance. I appreciate everybody's prayers and well wishes, and just keep praying for me. Well, I need it anyway, regardless of how I sound. Probably more so when I sound normal than when I'm sick. But Chuck, you know, you and I have been talking while I've had some downtime. We've been looking at things that have been going on. And as we teach our classes on the Constitution, we're always talking about this idea that Congress makes the laws. That's the way our Constitution spells out. Article 1, Section 1 is very clear that Congress has all the legislative power. But as you and I both know, and I think our listeners are starting to engage on, and that is oftentimes you either have other actors other than Congress who either want to make laws themselves or they don't want to be bound by the laws that Congress makes. And it's that latter category that came to our attention here recently in an article that you saw and you pointed out to my attention. And so why don't we talk with our listeners about when a law doesn't apply?
Well, that's right. And just remember, one thing we have to keep in mind when we make these discussions is that the Constitution is the law of the land. It is the highest law. And all of the people who we elect to office are bound by the law and by their oaths to obey it. This article that we're going to be talking about today, and I, again, as we have been doing, I will attach a link to it so people can read for themselves. But you've probably heard this if you've been out paying any attention at all. And this is the From the Hill's Finance and Economy blog. The Hill is a Washington Beltway blog.
It's actually very well respected as well, Chuck.
Yes.
I mean, a lot of our listeners have heard of Politico. Well, Politico is sort of like the National Enquirer of political blogs. The Hill would be considered the Cleveland Plain Dealer of political blogs.
To give you
a taste of it.
Politico would like to become the Hill.
Exactly.
And it's a long way off. And as you and I both had a recent conversation with a friend of ours who's the head of a large family-based organization, who used a Politico article to try to make a point, and we sort of said, okay, let's back off, consider the source here. This is Politico, folks. It's not exactly a paragon of journalistic excellence. And I was told, well, I've never been misquoted by Politico. And then, of course, the very next thing was I pulled up about five things that Politico had gotten wrong. And I said, it didn't take very much research. And then later it turned out that I was exactly correct in my assessment of the situation. But that being said, I've read a lot of things in The Hill, and I think I get a lot of good information. I get some disinformation in there from time to time, but you can't avoid that.
Well, that's because any news organ, whether it's a print organ, a blog, or if it's a talking head on the radio, oftentimes get their talking points straight from the political parties and from the political campaign. They're going to get the spin, and they're going to give you the spin.
Yeah, well, how many times have we caught the Columbus Dispatch basically printing press releases directly as their own work?
I mean, yes.
It's done all the time. Unfortunately, people begin to trust other people they shouldn't trust, and that's what happens.
Well, you know, I just wish, in relation to this article that we're talking about today, that that was the case, that this is just an instance of this political news organ making it up as they went along. Honestly, Charles, I don't think that's the case. I think this is the real deal. This is the actual article of what's going on in our country and what's wrong with the state of our country.
Well, what it comes from is a written statement that was issued by President Obama, and let's go over what this is about. This is from the On the Money, the Hill's Finance and Economy blog. It's written by Eric Wasson, and the headline is Obama says he's not bound by Guantanamo, gun control provisions. What he's talking about is the fact that if everyone will recall, just before the Christmas holiday, we went through this rigmarole with the the payroll tax break, that sort of kabuki theater of government. And by kabuki theater, I mean it was essentially grossly exaggerated, was much ado about nothing. Yes, do you still have an FICA tax cut? Yes, but the whole point is, how are we going to pay for this quote-unquote tax cut that isn't a cut at all? The money still has to go into the Treasury from somewhere. This wrestling match that was going on in Congress to try to make it look like they were actually trying to get something done to keep the government going through the holidays. And of course, you and I have both said, we really like it when the government shuts down because people find out how much they really don't need it.
That's
but
right.
That didn't happen in this case. and actually, we're going to have to come back in February and have a little more kabuki theater in the form of a fight over this tax cut, because then we have to decide how we're going to extend it, if we are, and everyone, since this is an election year, it will get extended, and how we're going to pay for it. That's going to be the real trick. What happened was, in this compromise that came up, that was signed just before the president went on vacation, were a number of riders were put on this bill.
Yes, and explain to our listeners just quickly, a rider on a bill is policy that is put on, so because this is a spending bill. So mostly it's line items that says X number of tens of millions of dollars for this particular program in this particular pot. But a rider is where Congress or the committees that are reviewing this bill say, you know, the policy statement is that this money can only be spent in this manner or it can't be spent for X, Y, and Z. In other words, they're restrictors, they're limitations on the way these dollars can be utilized.
Some of the riders that were put on this bill were things like Guantanamo can't be closed, and people can't be moved from Guantanamo into prisons in the United States. Basically, the Justice Department is enjoined from using certain provisions to go after more gun control measures. There were any number of things that were done to restrict President Obama's agenda for these items that were put into the as riders on this bill. And they weren't all just spending policy riders. Some of them were actually riders that were restricting the president's power that actually were within the power of Congress to do.
Oh, yes. But they were tied into appropriations, because that's the way you put a rider on an appropriation.
Exactly.
They were tied to the money. They were tied to the money.
Well, of course, everything's tied to the money, Barry, because the executive branch needs money to pursue their policy goals.
That's right.
And basically what Congress was saying was, you can't pursue these particular policy goals with this money, which is completely within the purview of the Congress to do. He objected to sections aimed at blocking health, climate, auto policy, and urban affairs czars being employed by the White House.
Let's talk about that provision very closely, Chuck, because that's one that's near and dear to our hearts as constitutionalists.
This whole idea of czars, that is basically these advisors who are given complete control over SCADs. When I say SCADs, you know, nobody knows, I don't think, really right now, how many actual government agencies there are and how many of them have redundant powers and authorities and sort of phantom powers and authorities that aren't given to them. Constitutionally, you know, one of the big problems we run into here is the fact that administrations, since at least the early 1900s, have operated on from this idea of administrative law. Since the early 1900s, the executive branch has had no trouble at all using what's known as administrative law, which is essentially the executive branch being handed over a government agency and then assigning that agency all kinds of lawmaking power that is completely extra-constitutional.
Absolutely.
Things like the National Labor Relations Board, the Interstate Commerce Commission, which is now defunct, but its duties have just been passed around to different agencies. All kinds of agents, sub-agencies of the Agriculture Department. Anybody who's doing policy-type things and then attaching law and sending out officers and actually handing out fines and those kinds of things, no agency has been given the power to fine anybody. That is a function of the federal court system through the legal authority, and only Congress can pass those laws. And yet FDA fines people all the time, and Congress looks the other way because they said, well, we've handed that authority over. You can't do that. But that being said, in our modern society, President Obama has taken that power, which most presidents have limited their own use of those use or abuse of those powers, at least to within a certain set of boundaries. And basically what he said in signing these bills is that he's not going to be bound by these provisions that are contained in the law. And he's issuing this statement while he's signing the law. So what he's basically signing into law is this thing where in which he says, I am signing this law, but I will not be bound by its provisions.
That's right. Now, to be fair, there's a direct quote in this article by the president with his signing, and it says that, and I quote, I have advised the Congress that I will not construe these provisions as preventing me from fulfilling my constitutional responsibility to recommend to the Congress's consideration such measures as I shall judge necessary and expedient. Well, you know what, Chuck? That's a red herring, because these writers had nothing to do with him bringing things, suggesting to Congress or recommending to the Congress's consideration. The administrations all the time will bring things up and suggest things to lawmakers, usually of their own party who are in leadership, portions of their agenda that they need to have a law passed in order to get accomplished. Nobody's saying anything about that. These provisions were to go to limit the actual acts of those things that he's doing already in office without the color of law, such as appointing czars, such as letting czars from the healthcare agencies advocate for gun control measures on the Hill. And the one that I thought was great. I'm glad our Congress people caught this one. That there was a provision in the bill's defense spending that limits the president's ability to put troops under foreign command. Okay, Charles, let me ask you a question. When we're talking about U.S. troops, who's the commander-in-chief of the United States military?
Well, it's supposed to be the president of the United States.
Is there any part in Article 2 of the Constitution which spells out the powers of the commander-in-chief that says that they can put troops under foreign commanders?
No, sir, there is not.
Okay, so for the president to get all upset and get all twisted about the Congress, as I said, it eliminated his ability because he doesn't have the constitutional ability. It just limited his ability. In other words, he's been doing something unconstitutional. A number of presidents have been doing this in relation to the United Nations for a number of decades. Congress should be stopping it completely. All they're doing is saying, just don't do it as much, and you need to notify us 30 days in advance.
Which is basically sort of like saying, notify us 30 days in advance and then you can rob a bank. As long as we know about it, you're perfectly fine with robbing this bank as long as we know about it 30 days in advance. Otherwise, you are completely forbidden from robbing this bank.
Exactly.
I'm sorry, that's nonsense. And I'm trying to remember the president that announced, I think it was Bill Clinton, that announced that American troops from that moment forward would be permitted to serve under foreign command. That will be the first time in the United States history that it allowed itself to serve under foreign command. During World War I, it was demanded by British and French generals who were basically smashing the cream of their youth into the lines to gain 3 feet over months of time in these wasted offensives in France. And the Americans looked at that and said, no, we're not going to play that game. You're not going to use us for replacements. We're here to try to help win the war. We're not here to replace the troops that you can't produce quick enough to get out into the field.
Exactly.
So, and that's exactly what has gone on here. Now, all of a sudden, we have our troops serving under UN command in all kinds of corners of the earth.
We have them serving under Pakistani leaders. We have them serving under Afghanis. We have them serving under, the list can go on and on and on and on. French commanders, Canadian commanders, British commanders. These are American troops, and he's the commander-in-chief. And there's no provision in the Constitution that allows him to do it. But because we don't have a Congress with a spine, the best they can come up with in a rider to the money that they're giving out is, well, you really can't do this as much as you've been doing it, and you got to give us 30 days notice before you do it. Chuck, as you and I both know, a lot of people are upset about this because they're saying, well, the president's violating the Constitution. We should be more upset that Congress is complicit in this violation of the Constitution by going ahead and giving the money without requiring the adherence to the Constitution. That's the problem. They just want to keep handing out the money. These little writers, if they were constitutionally based, would be great. But right now, all it is great political theater. So we need more principles with some of these policies, Chuck.
Definitely. And unfortunately, we're out of time, so we're going to have to continue this tomorrow. Join us tomorrow, ladies and gentlemen, for another Principles and Policies at 5:30. Thank you.